Welcome to the podcast on Baltimore, Curry, and Doug. In the few seconds it took you to hear and process the words in the title of this podcast, you may have begun to ask, what is Curry and Doug? Baltimore may be clear for some of you and not so clear for others. I encourage you not to worry. All will be made clear shortly. I am standing outside of the world-famous Lexington Market. This market is the oldest and longest-running market in the United States. Over 220 years in operation, it is located in the heart of, drumroll please, you guessed it, Baltimore City. This marketplace is a hub of activity. Full of sensorial experiences, there's the smell of fried food in the air, the expansive ceiling on the westward wing of the building offers an impressive stained glass image of a cow, there's a body oil vendor and food vendor directly across from each other, with a leather goods vendor stationed in a passageway that mingles the smells of fragrant oils, food, and leather in a swirl of olfactory chaos. Lexington Market is one of several brick-and-mortar markets strategically located at the center of the city's neighborhoods, and it's just one feature that makes this city unique. What makes this market significant is its size, location, and demographic of patrons. This market offers a variety of food and material goods, in addition to a great place to hear, mingle, and meet Baltimoreans. The city is also known for its inner harbor that is home to the National Aquarium and the Raven and Oriole Birds, for which its professional baseball and football teams are named. Baltimore is known for many famous residents, including Edgar Allan Poe and Frederick Douglass. There's also Fort McHenry and, of course, The Wire. Along with its historical charms, national attractions, and famous residents, part of the charm of Charm City is its people. But before we move any further, let me introduce myself. My name is Intia DeShields. I was born, raised, and educated in Baltimore City. I am a Baltimorean. I am currently pursuing my PhD in the Language Literacy and Culture program at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, where I'm studying the relationships between language, identity, and culture. Growing up in Baltimore, as well as visiting family in Philadelphia and Florida, and even being among family that were not American, I came to learn early on the role that language plays in establishing an identity. By observing and listening carefully to accents and dialects, I learned to transition between the linguistic characteristics that marked me socially and culturally as a Baltimorean. Though you may not hear it in my voice, there are a few characteristics unique to Baltimore speech. As we move forward, you will learn more about the words I mentioned earlier and what they mean. I will introduce you to three generations of an African-American family who were all born, raised, and educated on the west side of Baltimore City. I will introduce you to experts on the topic of English language variation who will give us some context for understanding what we hear among the voices that will bring those variations to life. Charm City, Birdtown, Poe Town for Edgar Allan Poe. These are some of the ways in which Baltimoreans affectionately refer to their city. But what about the pronunciation of the official city name, Baltimore? To explore the pronunciation of the city name, I ask my fellow Lexington Market attendants what city we are in.
Baltimore. Be more, and you better be more careful.
Baltimoreans cannot speak the King's English.
There you go. Can you say the name of the city for me one more time?
Baltimore.
Baltimore, all that.
Maryland. Baltimore. That's how we talk.
Yep, that's how we talk. Well, some of us, that is. But what you heard is the pronunciation of the city name that is unique to the African American population. In case you were wondering, there is a difference in the dialect of ethnic populations in Baltimore. One of the most notable is the pronunciation of Baltimore or Balmer. Do you hear the difference?
Baltimore.
Balmer.
Listen again.
Baltimore.
Balmer.
Okay, I think you've heard the difference in the pronunciation of these two words, or what linguists call the phonological variation. What's that word you say? Phonological? Phonology, or phonological, refers to the sounds of speech. If you look in a dictionary next to any given word, you will find a phonetic spelling that suggests how that word is to be pronounced. Notice I said suggest. As you know, Baltimore is spelled, say it with me, B-A-L-T-I-M-O-R-E. The suggested phonetic pronunciation is Baltimore. But you've already heard two very different pronunciations that are not included in the dictionary. You may not know that the regional identity of Baltimore can vary. Baltimore is the northernmost southern urban center and the most southern northern urban center. And the state of Maryland technically lies below the Mason-Dixon line, but many people differ on whether they see it as a northern or southern state. Maryland and the city of Baltimore are in between linguistically as well. The Maryland and the Baltimore accents are not what are traditionally considered to be northern or southern. In fact, there are many accents here within the urban landscape of Baltimore City, with Appalachian, African American, Chesapeake, and Eastern Shore influences. Residents and transplants often take a varied perspective on the regional identity of the state, in part because of language. Northerners in particular, from Pennsylvania and northward, may say we sound country, but not southern. Southerners will not identify the dialect or accent here as being a southern drawl by any means. At the same time, the accent here may not sound as northern to their ears as it would, say, in New York or Boston. What do Baltimoreans think about their regional identity? I interviewed several members of a family that has lived in Baltimore for four generations for this podcast. Let's hear what these long-standing locals think about the identity of Baltimore. Do you consider Maryland to be a northern or southern state?
Northern.
Northern?
Yeah. We're a northern state. We don't sound nothing south, nothing countryfied. We don't sound country.
I asked around town and received similar responses.
Although I know that Maryland is a southern state and I've lived here all my life, I do not consider it a southern state just by the way we move and the way we operate. When I think of southern states, I think of slow and people are moving slow. I also think of people are like country, and maybe other people do look at us as country, but living here, living in Baltimore all my life, it has been anything but slow. And I consider it to be always at a fast pace.
I would view Maryland more of a southern state because we sit below the Mason-Dixon line. But during the Civil War, we fought with the Union soldiers, so I would more or less go with the northern state because that's the way I was raised. And I think most of the people in this area would feel the same way because we were with the Union soldiers. So it's a little confusing, but we are right below the Mason-Dixon line. Baltimore has the northern type accent versus, you know, southern drawl with the states below us, such as Virginia and Georgia and Alabama. They have that drawl, like, I'm fine, or, you know, it's very distinct compared to what, you know, we talk with, like, here in Baltimore area.
You consider Baltimore your home?
Yes.
Right? How do you usually say the name of the city?
Baltimore.
Okay.
So you say Baltimore. I don't say Baltimore.
How do you say?
I just say Baltimore. Baltimore.
Baltimore. So you drag the end of it out a little more than your mom.
Baltimore.
So why is there so much variation? Why is it that some people say Baltimore, some say Balmer, and some say Baltimore? While some people may think that these types of phonetic relaxations are ways that people talk when they get lazy about their pronunciation, in fact, these types of processes are very common in English, especially when people are speaking casually.
I'm Walt Wolfram, William C. Friday, Distinguished University Professor and Director of North Carolina Language and Life Project at North Carolina State University.
I spoke with Professor Walt Wolfram about his pronunciation of Baltimore as Baltimore.
The natural processes of sort of laxing and neutralization and centralizing and so forth are more prone to take place, you know. So, for example, saying things like Missouri or Miami and so forth. So I think these sort of lenition processes are probably a product of sort of natural speech phenomena. People who are from an area, they say the word, they say the name so much that they apply these casual speech phenomena and therefore sort of adapt it to a sort of more phonologically or phonetically natural production.
Before we move on, you may be wondering why the African-American dialect is of any importance to scholars. In fact, what linguists call African-American English is actually one of the most studied varieties of American English, and many linguists, including Professor Walt Wolfram, have been studying it for many years. I asked Professor Wolfram more about his research. How long have you been researching African-American English?
Girl, when you wasn't even born.
I know.
Started doing research in African-American English in 1965 in Detroit. And then have been doing, well, I do research on lots of other things, have sort of come back to that over sort of the last 4.5 decades.
While many people think that the African-American accent is different or somehow not what some people might call proper English, linguists are interested in the ways that social groups might speak differently from one another. Varieties such as African-American English and any other variety of English are just as patterned and predictable as what we might call standard English, though these varieties may follow different linguistic rules at times. Language variations are viewed not as deficits. Rather, as linguistic research has shown, language variations are shared and unique characteristics that are often regionally or socially based and worthy of documentation and exploration. The pronunciation of Baltimore as Baltimore is only one of the features of the African-American dialect in Charm City that we will focus on here. In part 3 of this podcast, we will explore the phonological phenomenon that leads to pronunciations such as cur for carry in places like Baltimore. You will be introduced to some music that is popular among the city's African-American population. You'll also hear more from the family members who I interviewed, as well as other Baltimoreans who talk about this pronunciation. What you are about to hear is not a test. The tradition of Baltimore Club began in the late 1980s, when the most popular of its songs, Doo-Doo Brown, reached national fame. In the clip you just heard, the singer and writer of this song, Big Tony, the beloved master of ceremonies for many of Baltimore's fashion shows and cultural events, was a Baltimore native who spoke with the Baltimore dialect in all of his songs, and he documented the pronunciations of various neighborhoods and words on his club mixtapes. Yes, they were recorded on tapes. It was the early 90s. Listen again.
Miss Tony said, how you want to curve? Miss Tony said, how you want to curve? Miss Tony said, how you want to curve? What's up, what's up?
Did you catch that? Did you hear the word curry? No, he's not referring to East Indian curry seasoning. In case you are not sure what he said, the name of the song and chorus lines are Miss Tony Said How You Want Curry. In other words, Miss Tony said, how do you want to carry it? So, do other Baltimoreans also use this same pronunciation of curry for the word carry? To find out, let's hear again from several members of the Baltimore family who I interviewed for this podcast.
What about the word carry? Carry out.
Carry out. Carry out.
How do you say it?
I said pronounce it carry out. Carry. Sounds like a more of a you than a.
The funny thing about language socialization is we are likely to not realize we are speaking differently until someone points it out to us. I was that someone today.
Maybe we need to speak class back in English school. Proper English. Because we're not speaking proper English.
It's a variation.
Variation, yeah, but not
It's a dialect. English. It's not what the woman, you think about what the woman at the job told you that you're supposed to speak.
True. But how am I supposed to speak if I'm being brought up to this area that you're in from?
Anne, like many Americans, believes there is a proper way of speaking English and a wrong way. So to hear the idea that this variation is different and not wrong may seem off-kilter. But let's explore this variation through a sociolinguistic lens. I spoke to two sociolinguists about this type of pronunciation of words, like curry for carry.
Renee Blake, faculty member in the Department of Linguistics and the Department of Social and Cultural Analysis at NYU.
My name is Kara Schusterman. I'm a graduate student at New York University doing my PhD in linguistics.
She explains why this feature is interesting to sociolinguists.
One of the first conversations we had in terms of what we wanted to work on was about this thing that we were hearing in St. Louis rap. So we had both really noticed the right there and the hot and her and all of that music that was coming out of St. Louis around 2000, 2001. And we wanted to know what was going on. Was this a feature of the dialect or was this something that was just created for hip hop? Because my feeling was, you know, it could have been created for hip hop because it allows for rhyming really easily, because all these words that wouldn't necessarily rhyme, all of a sudden you can rhyme them because you're collapsing these vowel differences. And so that was the question we had. The really interesting thing about this variable, which we call, you know, the variable, is that it's part of a sound change that's unique to the African-American community. So it's not something that we're finding among white speakers in the U.S. The R variable, what we call it technically, is vowel centralization before R. So you have these front vowels, so they're at the front of the vowel space, and then when they occur before R, they can actually become centralized to something that's more like a schwa-like sound. And so this can happen with any of the front vowels, A, E, I, A, E, and it happens in terms of linguistic environment. It actually happens differently in different regions.
In other words, when the R sound comes between two vowel sounds in a word, such as carry, that vowel is likely to change in the ways you've heard here. Carry becomes curry, parents becomes parents, area becomes area, and so on. So how did you come to include Prince George's County, Maryland, in the exploration of the variable?
We decided to do some field work. And so Renee had heard it used by a man in Virginia, and some of our classmates had heard it used in around the Baltimore, D.C. area. So we basically just rented a car and decided to go down and try to interview some people, just whoever would talk to us. And I think we were planning to go to Virginia, and we interviewed really just a couple people out there and immediately started hearing this R variable that we were looking for. The following summer, I went to St. Louis with another graduate student, Simonique Moody, and that's where we went and started interviewing all these people from St. Louis and then finding exactly what we were hearing in hip-hop and then realizing that it was, in fact, a part of the dialect in St. Louis.
I decided to play the clip of the Baltimore club music that you heard earlier, in which Miss Tony asks, how you want curry?
Miss Tony said, how you want curry? Miss Tony said, how you want curry? Miss Tony said, how you want curry? What's up, what's up?
Okay.
Wow. Wow. Wow, yes. That sounds like authentic Baltimore, from what my understanding would be. So he is doing the intervocalic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does it sound like what you've heard in Prince George's County and St. Louis?
Yes, with the exception of not having the her and there, but otherwise it sounds like, it definitely sounds like Prince George's County and sounds similar to St. Louis.
We can hear that distinct and common pronunciation of Carrie used by the family members who I interviewed. Here's what they think about the pronunciation.
Carrier.
Mm-hmm.
Carrier. It's all kind of how fast you go. Carrier.
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 Instead of...
Carrier.
So if we said curry out in another way, how do you think it would sound?
Curry out. And you go down south, carry out. I don't know how some people say curry out. I really didn't pay no attention to them. Because they do sound funny. Their curry out is sound different from ours. I can tell mm-hmm. you that.
Well, if I say I'm going to get carry out.
You sound funny right there.
I sound funny?
Yeah.
Why?
Because then you say you're going to carry out.
I'm going to carry it out.
You sound country there, too.
I sound country?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know. That's what you
say. Is it the A?
It's the A.
Carry?
Yeah, carry. Because mine sound more like you. Mine sound more like C-U-R-R-Y.
Curry.
Curry.
Now I sound like a Baltimorean. Mm-hmm. Curry. Mm-hmm. But if I say carry...
You don't sound Baltimore.
That's not Baltimore.
Nope.
Curry. Yuck. Curry out. Curry.
How do you say it?
Curry out.
Curry out.
Curry out.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference right there?
I hear it on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
She said more to see you.
Mm-hmm.
She said more to see A.
Say it again.
Curry out.
Curry. Curry. Opposed to... How would it be said if
carry
you weren't
out.
From Baltimore?
Carry out.
You say it with you too. And you sound too.
How would you say it if you weren't from Baltimore?
Carry out. Because with an A. Because it's C. We say curry out. But they say carry out. Yeah. Like carry. Like you say, carry. Come here, carry. Come here, carry this out for me, please. Mm-hmm. But we say curry out. Like curry powder.
Mm-hmm.
So that is
so anyway.
So does this mean that this pronunciation is a unique feature of African-American English? I ask if there were any findings of white speakers using this same variable.
It's not something that we found in our own recordings. It could, I would imagine it might be used by white speakers who are perhaps members of the Black community who live in Black neighborhoods in these areas. But otherwise, it's not something that we found. Now, it has been attested for one word class in Philadelphia, you get a merger of the word fairy and words like F-E-R-R-Y and words like furry, F-U-R-R-Y. So it's called the fairy-furry merger. And it only happens for words that are in that class that have the epsilon before R. And so that happens specifically among white speakers in Philadelphia. Otherwise, we haven't found it in the regions we've been to, like St. Louis. And I know Pollock and Bernie didn't find it in Memphis. And I don't think white speakers are doing it in Baltimore. They're definitely not doing it in Prince George's County.
Basically, R wreaks havoc on preceding vowels. You know, just about every variety has one of that set of Mary, Mary, Murray, Murray, which they homophonize. And so the particular Carey pronunciation in Baltimore, I would say, is just sort of a local adaption of that.
As you heard from our experts, the pronunciation of the er variable is complex in the United States. In some places like Philadelphia, white speakers may have a similar pronunciation, but only in words like fairy and Mary. And in some places like St. Louis, Missouri, African American speakers tend to extend the pronunciation to a greater range of phonological context, which is why we hear them pronounce here as her and there as there. In Baltimore, African-American speakers, but usually not white speakers, typically say curry for carry, parents for parents, and area for area, but not her or their. So, we found that the centralization of the er variable is not strictly unique to Baltimore, although it does give the Baltimore accent some of its flavor. Now, let's extend our search for our last feature, which is potentially wholly unique to Baltimore. This search brings us to part 4 of the podcast. We'll explore the use of the word dog for dog. You will hear more from the family about this word and the impact of dialect on both education and identity. You will also hear from Professor Wolfram, who happened upon the variation during his research here.
Baltimore in 1999, and I heard the word Doug, In my head, I wonder, what in the world is a Doug? What I would hear people say it all the time, but I had no idea what it was, and I didn't want to ask.
Where are you from?
I'm from Connecticut.
I had a very, very similar experience. I'm from Virginia, and I'm used to having a Southern drawl and hearing others who have a Southern drawl, but this accent I couldn't pick up on.
Can you tell me about your reaction when you first learned what Doug actually was? My first reaction was, well, is it me or is it them? And I was confused by wondering to grow up 17 years pronouncing things and talking a certain way. But then I came to appreciate the fact that maybe different people just do things differently and appreciated them for just everybody pronouncing things differently.
Okay. I have to say that I was just a tad bit less open-minded. I actually grew up in a home where my mother was very strict on pronunciation. And when I heard a society changing the O sound to a U sound, I think my mother's lessons came up and said, hey, you can't do that. But I think it's grown on me over a while.
Any idea what Doug might be? You may have guessed correctly, but in case you are still not sure, I talked to Anne, the matriarch of the family I interviewed for this podcast, about it.
You have Doug, sort of like a K at the end.
My Doug sound like a G at the end. Doug. That's a G at the end of that. Doug. Where do you get the K at?
You can kind of hear it at the end of it.
I hear my G.
Say it
Doug.
Again.
Doug.
Okay, now say it the way you usually say it.
Doug.
Okay.
That's a K. So I want to say two different words, two different times, different each time. Wow. Yeah, I hear that a lot. I hear a whole lot.
When it comes to the Baltimore accent, people like to point that out about Baltimore, huh?
Tell you for that. Let me hear you say Doug. Doug. Doug.
You're like, what's the problem?
Yeah, what's the problem? Doug. I mean, Doug. That, duh. Can you say cat? Rabbit? You're right. That do sound funny.
Anne's son came in and jumped right into the conversation.
Oh, dog.
How do you say it?
Dog.
You say dog.
Like that dog.
Mm-hmm. Oh, son, I say dog.
A family friend says that he tries to correct himself when he's around certain people, but it seems unnatural.
That is a characteristic unique to Baltimore.
For real.
Let's go back and hear again from Professor Wolfram, who explains his link to Baltimore in learning about Doug. When he first came to Baltimore to do research, he had never heard a community where dog was pronounced as Doug.
Washington, it didn't exist there. So it was sort of totally strange to us. I haven't heard it anyplace else. It is pretty locally regionalized. You know, it's not found in other areas of the rural or urban South. It might be found in borders that extend beyond Baltimore, particularly to the east. I've heard that it's found in some African American communities to the rural east of Baltimore. So it was one of the first instantiations of maybe African American English is a little more regional than people have been giving it credit for. It awakened us to sort of some misconceptions we had, which were, you know, that northern varieties of African-American English were pretty homogeneous.
So how did you come to do research in Baltimore?
Back in the early 90s, Baltimore became one of our research sites for the application of sociolinguistic information.
He was here studying language testing and the possibility of language discrimination in K-12 assessment.
You have a disproportionate number of African-American kids in special ed in Baltimore compared to the proportion of the population. So our research question was, is part of that reason because they're misapplying tests of assessment in terms of diagnosing kids? So that's where we started. So in that context, then, we worked with speech and language pathologists, developed a core where we had a group of speech and language pathologists who became dialect experts, and their job was to get information about dialects to the rest of the speech pathologists. That's why we developed a handbook.
As Professor Wolfram explained, in the 1990s, there was a disproportionate number of African-American students in special education for language arts. This phenomenon prompted the Baltimore City Public School System to explore the relationship between the local dialect and diagnosis. I was curious to know about Ann's experiences with language.
Okay, second grade with Miss Pinkin, she always had a problem saying, I don't understand nothing you're saying. That's why she failed me.
After graduating high school, Ann explains that she went back to speech therapy.
I went to my own rehab for speech because I was told on this one job that I wanted, I couldn't become a nurse because of my English. I shouldn't let it stop me, but it did.
Tell me about your high school.
Oh, Lord have mercy, Maryville, majority white.
What's the full name of the school?
Mergenthal Vocational Tech. Majority of white school. Not that many blacks went there in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Well, let me change that 70. 68.
Wow.
It was majority white.
Majority white.
Mm-hmm.
How were you allowed to go there?
I had the average, the grade average. You had to have an 85 to get into Murrow, and I just made an 85 average. Took up business ed. I didn't really care for it because I wanted to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go to nursing career, but I didn't want to go back a year. So I didn't want to stay another year there. So I kept on with my business course, which was bookkeeping, which my other goal that I wanted to become was accountant. No, I did not become one of these.
Why?
I don't know. I've been told my lifetime, you're not going to complete this, you're not going to complete this.
Who told you that?
Oh, my God. My own rehab.
The same speech therapy center that you went to?
I took business ed. I took accountant there, too. When I took that test, they give you a test of my own rehab. The test they gave me, I passed because I had business ed. Anything you're going to take up and already had, you're going to be better at it.
Mm-hmm.
Common sense know that. I was better in business, how they say, I was better, quote, I was good in a business course.
Mm-hmm.
I guess so. I had business course 3 years at Mervo. Mm-hmm. So I went on taking accounting again at my rehab. Came up with A+, but still couldn't get a job in it. And to me, you ask me, was the prejudice back there? I'm going to have to say yes.
You think they were prejudiced?
Yes. Because the same girl who was in my class, and I ain't going to forget her either,
mm-hmm.
came up with a B+, and I had an A+. And who got the job?
Did she speak the same way you spoke?
No.
How did she speak?
She sounded more country to me. To mm-hmm. me, she sounded country. To me.
So if you consider that you picked it up from your family, how did that make you feel, at least in thinking about your own family and then
really
your own speech habits?
I really never thought about it because I said, this is how I sound, this is me. And life go on.
Mm-hmm.
They consider speech therapy, my speech was a handicap against me, which I did too. Do it have to do with my English? Yes. I think mm-hmm. a lot of it had to do with my English, by the way I sound, more than anything.
More than anything else?
Mm-hmm. Because you can't be in a business course and have bad English and somebody can't understand you. They don't want you.
Right.
And I know that for a fact. So do I have a problem with it? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're saying you can't do the job. You know the job, but they don't want to hear you talk.
Has the way you talk ever benefited you in school or on the job?
No. No.
And you say that because of your experiences mm-hmm. from before?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No. It never benefited me. No. Anyone with a data injury never benefit me. No. I was told one time to get off the intercom.
Really?
As we learned from Professor Wolfram's research and from Anne's experiences, there are many complexities surrounding language variation, Language is a part of our identity and culture as human beings, and we learn our language patterns from our families and friends within our local neighborhoods and communities. But then, when different language patterns come into contact with each other, people who are in power to make decisions may be able to distinguish these different accents and even discriminate against speakers based on the ways that they sound. Much linguistic research has found that linguistic discrimination is unfortunately common, and it deeply affects the life experiences and the opportunities of people like Anne. As linguists believe, language variations aren't wrong. They're just different. But sadly, not everyone shares this point of view. Now that you have learned about the complexity of the geographical identity of Baltimore and the phonetic pronunciations of Baltimore as Balmer and Baltimore, in addition to the use of the er variable in the word curry for carry, as well as the wholly unique feature of the centralized schwa in the word dug for dog. In the last section of this podcast, you will hear from two Baltimore transplants on their adjustment to being surrounded by the Baltimore dialect of the African American community. Lastly, we will hear from a Baltimore native that we heard from earlier, and Anne, who will offer a lasting thought on language and identity. The women I spoke with earlier added to the conversation that I had with the family.
Now that you're in Baltimore and you're around Baltimoreans often, do you ever find yourself using the word Doug to describe a Doug?
Definitely not the word Doug, but there's other words that may say Baltimore versus Baltimore. So I do see myself changing up sometimes the way I use words.
I have to agree, too. Baltimore has really infiltrated the way I talk. I do not say Doug, definitely, but I do say Baltimore. I don't know. It just came one day.
This goes back to what Professor Walt Wolfram said earlier.
People who are from an area say the name so much that they apply these to casual speech phenomena and therefore sort of adapted to a sort of more phonologically or phonetically natural production.
So in other words, the pronunciation of Baltimore as Baltimore may be a natural progression, and even migrants to the city may over time come to pronounce the name of the city this way. In comparison, the other pronunciations that we've talked about in this podcast, such as curry for carry and Doug for dog, tend to be used only by true locals who were born and raised in Baltimore. These features are less likely to be adapted into the linguistic identity of migrants of the city. For native Baltimoreans, awareness of these kinds of linguistic differences is a part of their identity and experience. They have faced criticisms from those in other areas, and they may even have been subjected to scrutiny of their dialect even here at home. But the Baltimoreans we've heard from let us know that difference and variety is natural, comfortable, and meaningful to them. Anne leaves us with a lasting thought.
Language is how you sound, where you came from, what you're trying to tell somebody to make them listen to you. Because when people can't say something clear, they don't hear you. They don't really want to hear you. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of sad because everybody sounds different. The white people sound different. And a lot of black people sound different. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's important.
So we've learned, language is important. There are varieties in every region and across ethnicities, and they add flavor to our cities and neighborhoods and to our own identities. As Miss Tony said, how you want curry? Special thanks to Walt Wolfram, Renee Blake, and Cara Schusterman for contributing their expert advice about language variation. I would also like to thank the family that I recorded for this podcast for allowing me to sit with you, listen, record, and disrupt your evening for several weeks. Thank you to Aaron D'Angelo of Vinyl Records and to Randy Newman for allowing me the rights to use the beautifully written Baltimore, written by Randy Newman and sung by Nina Simone. And to Miss Tony for leaving a legacy of Baltimore spirit and dialect on tape and CD for years to come. Your music provided the cohesive threads that I was looking for.